Well, if the numerical calculations are so, and we are in the atypical period of Jubilee, the times of restitution, 120 years later, there ought to be some sort of evidence, some tangible evidence that that's a fact. And here to argue the point is Brother Gene Burns. Brother Gene?
Thank you, Brother Obie. And first of all, I want to say that I bring the Christian love and greetings of the Northwest Indiana Bible students with whom we meet, and also the South Bend Bible students, and also Sister Ruth and family sent their love. And I want to thank Brother David for his doing all the math for me. And, you know, it's been a special delight at this convention to see so many of the young brethren up here preaching and teaching the truth, and it's a joy forever to see that there are brethren that are prepared to carry the torch of truth onward. And we've had that joy even in our own class, and we had some brethren over from Africa just, you know, not too long in the truth, and here they are. We had them serving us, and they were telling the truth back to us. And it's a joy. It's a joy forever. And in our own class, we have Brother Tom Mahacek, one of our newer elders. And, you know, he's all afire. He's been teaching the second volume. He had all his ducks lined up, and it's just joyful to see the brethren all afire teaching these truths. And Ruth and I, we just sit back and we rejoice that there's others that are carrying the torch. Our lesson, though, is from Leviticus 25, 9 to 17, and we're not going to read it all, but you're familiar with it. Thou shalt cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month, and guess what day it is? The Atonement Day. Not after the Atonement Day, but during the Atonement Day. So there's no question the Atonement Day is when. On your chart there, it's the Gospel Age. Well, the sacrifices of the Gospel Age are ongoing. And this is when the Jubilee must sound. We can't wait until after the Atonement Day and say, well, when the church's sacrifices are complete, that's when the Jubilee takes effect. This tells us very clearly that it's in the Day of Atonement, not after it. Okay, it's just a simple truth, but you don't have to be a great mathematician to figure this one out. But the Jubilee, without getting into all the details of it, it was according to the number of years after the Jubilee, thou shalt buy of thy neighbor, and according to the number of years of the fruits he shall sell unto thee, according to the multitude of years thou shalt increase the price, and according to the fewness of years thou shalt diminish the price. For according to the number of years of fruits doth he sell it to thee. But the main lesson of the Jubilee is in this sentence: ye shall not therefore oppress one another, but thou shalt fear thy God. For I am the Lord. That was the main thrust of the Jubilee cycle. Now, Paul tells us, we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin, Romans 7:14. The law, you know, sometimes we think of it as just being legal. And it was legal. It had thou shalt nots and so on. But the law was also spiritual. The spiritual lesson of the Jubilee is you must not oppress. You must get this oppression out of your heart. You've got to be a neighbor and a lover of your brother. This is the message. And so the Jubilee was there to act as a break against human depravity, to stop this cycle of oppression. Yes, the trumpet blew on the Atonement Day. And those who had received the possessions of their brethren, you know, because of the selfishness of the human heart, they were a little bit reticent to relinquish the advantages that they had gained. And those who had suffered loss, they were eager to get back everything that they could and maybe a little extra. So you had two sides of the problem. The Jubilee, you know, should have been a sweet and wonderful time where brethren would say, you know, this is what you really should have, and everyone should have been grateful and thankful, but it didn't work that way. There were loud voices raised, sometimes in anger and quarreling, you're giving me this, but it isn't enough. And sometimes there was a reticence, dragging their feet to give them this, and it's like pulling teeth to get everything back that you're supposed to get back. And so I'm sure that this existed during the Jubilees, and that's why they never really kept the Jubilees the way they should have. It wasn't, there may have been individuals that did, but there were those that, you know, were unhappy with their settlement, and there were those that were unhappy in giving what they had to give, and so there was this human element, as we can understand. It's just like labor and capital today, they're always at loggerheads. We find that, you know, when the Israelites left Egypt, they were freed from their bondage to the Egyptians, and, you know, they thought they were going to march out of the land of Egypt, and they were going to march into the Holy Land, and it was going to be theirs, and it was a land flowing with milk and honey, and it was all wonderful. But did it happen that way? No, it didn't happen that way at all. They left the bondage from Egypt, all right, but what was walking with them as they left the land? Human depravity, human selfishness and sin. And sin was walking with them. And because they thought they were free, they weren't free. They were still in bondage to sin. And because of that sin, there were great numbers of them that ultimately did not enter the promised land. And additionally, they didn't know when they left Egypt. Moses knew that where they were going, but they didn't know where they were going. They thought that he was going to take them to the promised land, and lo, what does he do? He heads right down to the Sinai Peninsula. And then on top of that, he takes them through this arid, terrible wilderness. And then they arrive, lo and behold, at the Mount of God, Mount Horeb, Mount Sinai, where God had spoke to Moses at the burning bush. And it was awesome. It was terrible. The Lord spoke to them from heaven. They heard the representation of the voice of the Lord. So they couldn't accuse Moses of anything. They said, "We don't want to hear this voice anymore. Moses, you go up in the mountain. We'll do whatever you say, but tell the Lord, stop speaking." They weren't prepared for this when they left Egypt. God gave them a law. He brought them into the bonds of a covenant. They were asked to receive a law and to accept the disciplines that go with keeping a law. And the ability to be governed by law requires discipline on the part of a people. And they weren't used to this kind of arrangement. They were used to making their own laws as they went along, and suddenly they were given a law, and my, it was rigid. And it was firm, and it was high, and it was lifted up, but they just were not prepared for this as much as they thought they were. Oh, they thought, sure, we're going to, all these things will we do. You can count on it, Lord. But it was only 40 days later that they broke the first three commandments. So, the conditions were very difficult. Now, it says in Leviticus 5:10, "You shall proclaim liberty throughout all the land and to all the inhabitants thereof. It shall be a jubilee unto you, and ye shall return every man unto his possessions, and ye shall return every man unto his family." Basically, two things were involved here. Every Israelite had a land inheritance, every family, and that was theirs forever, for life. And then, if through illness, through sickness, through whatever, you had to get extra money and you had to sell the land, well, you were given 1 year right. If you could buy it back, you would have that right to do so. But if you couldn't, then at the end of the 50th year, no matter what you did, it was going to return to the family. Wonderful. Then the second was that families were to be reunited. The Lord is a God of families. He wanted the families reunited. You couldn't only go in servitude how long? 7 years. But if the Jubilee was coming up, you could only go into servitude for 1 year or 6 months, but you couldn't pass the Jubilee and still be in servitude. They had to release you. All the children, all the families could be reunited. So it was a wonderful thing. The Jubilee was to act as a break to human selfishness. There's a tendency to add field to field, house to house. You know, that's the capitalistic method, isn't it? That's what it's all about. Go out there and, you know, and get it. It's yours to get. But the Lord wanted to break this impulse. God did not want his people to feed like frenzied sharks on those who had fallen on hard times. These inbuilt laws were intended to give pause to the tendency of man to want to exploit his fellow man. And yet the law provided for a certain advantage in being generous. Yeah, if your neighbor needed money and he needed to sell his land, you could buy it back and you could get a little advantage for it. So there was an inbuilt mechanism so that there was a certain amount of profit, but at the same time, you would have to release all your advantages at a given point. The Jubilees forced you to do that. Well, as Brother David said, they kept 19, and then they, well, they never really kept 19 correctly, as he also mentioned. They never entered into the spirit of it, and so finally the Lord brought on the 70 years of desolation and so on till they fulfilled the Sabbath, which was covered already. But our lesson now is the practical side in the antitypical Jubilee. The Jubilee type has a bearing on the antitypical Jubilee. When the Jubilee trumpet blew at the time of our Lord's return, it was a great moment in history. The world was awakened to the cries of liberty, restitution, human rights, human dignity, new forms of government giving control to the people. No longer would a few people be in power and decide what a man should live on. No more the old company store. It had to give way to the supermarket, right? The company bosses, they couldn't sit in the dark rooms or the lighted rooms in the back and decide what a man was going to make. They had to sit down with the workers, and they had to come to some agreement. There was a cry for an equitable distribution of the world's wealth. A cry for a voice in government, for self-determination. The point to be noticed in all of this is that much of the early days of the harvest were all valid. These were all valid human rights, human dignity, liberty, the recognition of the individual inalienable rights were all a part of the Jubilee trumpet message. There's no question about that. But what happened? Well, the last quarter of the 19th century saw, you know, at the time of our Lord's return from 1874 on, throughout Europe, they were talking. Men in groups were talking. They were meeting in their private homes. They were meeting in their restaurants. They were meeting in the beer parlors all over Europe and the public gathering places. Men in hushed tones spoke of what? New forms of government, of labor unions, of social reforms that would in fact bring down the ruling houses of Europe, would also challenge the great banking systems of the world. The old industrial world and the bankers were on alert. When World War I broke out, an old order began to collapse. The status quo was going to end forever. The war, which was terrible indeed, with carnage on the battlefield such as the world had never known. The Gatling machine gun, the huge Big Bertha guns, tanks, airplanes, and yes, even that terrible mustard gas that they used once and they don't want to use again. It was such a terrible thing. But this didn't affect the ruling class. They sat way back of the front lines. They were rich and powerful, and they sat in their gracious palaces, insensitive to the carnage of what was taking place. And they were luxuriating in the splendor of their wealth until 1917, something dreadful happened. The Bolshevik Revolution broke out, and suddenly they all realized the world was on fire, it was being threatened. And from that day till now, they have spent trillions of dollars trying to contain the uprising of the masses. Suddenly, the realization came to those in power that the common man, when aroused, could destroy the comfortable arrangements in the world that had made so many rich and surfeited with wealth and luxury. The leaders of the Western world saw the handwriting on the wall, and since the Bolshevik Revolution, we know what happened. The next year, 1918, there was rioting in the streets of Berlin. 1,200 people were killed. The communist movement was starting to infiltrate Europe, and the banking system of the world plunged millions of dollars. They began to spend money on a scale that they never were prepared to spend before to contain this rising mass of discontent. They finally stayed it in Germany, but they didn't stay it only with armies. They learned what Marie Antoinette didn't learn. Of course, it's not necessarily true that she said, "Let them eat a cake if they don't have bread," but the leaders of the world realized that they had to make concessions. And that's where you began to find the great social reforms began to take place. They began deficit spending to appease the masses, to bring in great social reforms. And so you've had socialized medicine, you've had social security, you've had all of these benefits that came, not because certain ones decided in their heart of hearts that they wanted to be kind to people, but this was the only way to stay the uprising masses. Here in the States, it was the Great Depression, which found the masses marching on Washington, and they used the army to ruthlessly put down the rising tide. The World Banks would not release money, and it created one of the worst depressions in history in this country and in the world. It was the tightest time for money that existed in the history of man, and that's really what brought on, we believe, the Great Depression. And if they hadn't brought in certain social reforms, we believe that this country would have gone into some changes of government, because there were just literally millions of people in the Great Depression that were at their rope's end, as it were. People in those days were law-abiding, and they were more restrained than they are today. But I lived through the Depression as a boy, and I know that it was not uncommon to hear a knock on the door, and a hungry man or woman and their child would be asking for food. And they were good people, but they just, that's how terrible conditions were. They just went and they saw a door that looked like they might get a meal. That's where they would try to get a meal. It wasn't only the soup kitchens. The point we are making is that social reforms began to be made. Roosevelt, do you know what he did? He brought in every article of the socialist platform he brought into effect. He didn't run on the socialist platform, but he brought in every item on the socialist platform is what Roosevelt accomplished. He gave labor a green light. He gave John L. Lewis the right to organize without the court injunctions, and also he prevented the corporations from hiring thugs and goons to beat up on the labor unions. Now, we just traced recent history to show that the Jubilee trumpet has created all kinds of changes. There's actions and there's reactions, and that's just exactly what the Lord intended. The coming of the Industrial Revolution of the 18th century paved the way for the great banking system and industrial complexes to arise in the earth. You know, in Brother Russell's day, 70 million people lived on the land, were farmers. You know how many farmers there are today? There are 3 million people that live on the farms, and I'm one of them that lives on a farm, but I'm not a farmer. A lot of us that live on farms, we're not farmers. We have more lawyers now than we have farmers. And I'm not saying that's bad, but I'm telling you, it's change. But the world has changed too. Under Hoover, he was dead set against any deficit spending. He was a good, honest man, but he didn't want to go in debt one nickel. When Roosevelt came in and everyone after him, they started deficit spending. Now, how many trillion dollars are we in debt? It's 5 trillion and counting. And you know how much that represents for every family in the United States? $78,000 per family. Think anybody's ever going to pay that off? Now, why do you suppose they're doing this? Why are they deficit spending? Well, you have to appease the masses. We've created a higher standard of living by going bankrupt. That actually is what we're doing. We're deficit spending. If you did that personally, the sheriff would be knocking on your door and removing you from your house and putting a padlock on it and saying you are an irresponsible person, and you know we're taking charge of your house for you. All right, but what has happened since the Jubilee trumpet has blown? In the early years of the Jubilee, we want to take notice that everything was centered around the legitimate human rights of man. It was a cry for human rights, human dignity, and basically a more equitable distribution of the world's wealth. All these things were what the world should have. They are the things that the Jubilee trumpet guarantees to every man. The only thing the Jubilee trumpet guarantees more than just this. The Jubilee promises what the nations could never give. What does it promise? It promises glory and honor for every man that doeth righteousness. Do you think that the nations can give glory and honor to any man or every man? They can't do it, even if they wanted to in their heart of hearts. They can't even make, a decent distribution of the world's wealth. There's no form of government we can do that can make this possible. Now, but something has happened along the line toward human liberty and dignity. After World War II, we found things were beginning to turn inside out. You know, remember what Satan did at the French Revolution. He cast out a flood of water after the woman. Why? He wanted to destroy the woman with it. How? Well, it was a flood of truth. And the idea was, in the French Revolution, you know, the cry was for liberty, fraternity, and reason. They created the goddess of reason, and there was a lot of truth. But the French had never had a Reformation, and so they kept this throttled and throttled and throttled. And finally, when the Reformation really broke in the French Revolution, it was at a feverish pitch. And they went after the aristocracy and they went after the priestcraft. And there was a terrible, terrible slaughter. But Satan cast it out, this flood of water. And, you know, he never was very good at handling the truth, and he didn't know what he was doing, because the earth opened up its mouth and swallowed the water, and the woman was saved. He thought that it would be like an emetic, and the world would receive this truth, and they would revolt at it, and they say, oh, we don't want any more of this. Let's go back to the old church-state arrangement. But no, it was the opposite. They got a taste, and it was pretty good. And they kept it. And so now the second time around, Satan is got a different ploy. It's similar, but he's a little smarter now than he was before. Satan learned from that experience, and so have the demons. And now, even while the Jubilee trumpet is calling for human dignity, human rights, and an equitable distribution of the world's wealth, the powers of darkness are at work calling for prisoners' rights, homosexuals' rights, the rights of every deviant element of society to live different lifestyles. Nothing is right. Nothing is wrong. Our school books are written to cause our children to accept different lifestyles as a matter of their own personal choice. Nothing is really sacred. Everything is relative, and each person must be free to exercise his liberties to sin as he or she chooses. It's been twisted around. Instead of the legitimate rights, now you have the rights really to sin. It's a complete turnaround, but it's very effective. And people are believing they have a right to live their own lifestyle and have a right to marry and divorce at will, and they have a right to do this and that, and the whole thing is so mixed up. Everyone has their own rights. And some of the rights that they imagine they have are really wrong. But now, you know, not all the worldly writers are... Some of them see the light on this matter. Michael Sandel wrote a book about democracy's discontent. And it should have been titled How Moral Norms and Principles Have Been Systematically Drained from American Governments in Only Two Generations. He observed that in yesteryear, laws routinely embodied the principles and the views of the common good arising from the citizenry. Now those kinds of laws are denounced as biased or attempts to legislate morality. Don't you see what's happened? Why, anything that's right is biased. If you try to make a law that is an absolute law, why, well, you're trying to legislate morality. It brackets moral issues, pushes them aside, and excludes them from the debate. They're not a part of the debate in our society. And it frames everything in terms of individual rights, autonomy, privacy, and choice. That's the new flood of liberty that's replacing the equitable ones, the just ones, the rights for human dignity, and so on. Now we have a right to personal choice. No matter what it is, we have that right, a right to sin even, because that's my personal choice. Who's to say that I can't do this? You know, that's the new look. And so we see that while the Jubilee trumpet has blown, these other forces are mixing darkness with the light. By putting a different spin on things, we are being deceived, especially our young people who go to valueless schools, valueless employment, and sometimes valueless lives. If it feels good, do it. You have the right to do anything and everything you feel ingratiates you. No one is asked to defer anything for the higher and more lasting good. Do it now. Tomorrow is too far away. Under this arrangement, our schools, laws, and public policies are kept aloof from the divisive moral and religious issues, which are a constant and must be addressed, but they're swept under the rug. And so we see how this is a counter-movement to the blowing of the Jubilee trumpet. But there are profound problems in basing our politics on the image of self as free and independent, unencumbered by aims and attachments it does not choose for itself. That's just not what the Jubilee trumpet announced. It doesn't mean you can do anything you want, that you have no moral responsibility. But under this sounding of the Jubilee trump, this confusion, this false information is being trumpeted forth. The founding fathers talked a lot about morals and virtues and obligations. To regain the sense of balance, the world needs to engage the moral and religious convictions of the world. And we believe that they will ultimately have to do this. Just in passing, I couldn't help but notice one of the psychologists who has what she calls a moral health show. Laura Schlesinger. She was she runs a talk show now, but she left the medical practice because she feels psychology today is morally bankrupt. She said they are not allowed to make moral judgments in therapy. She speaks to personal responsibility in all of her talk shows. She rejects the notion that feelings are paramount. And I quote from her, she said, "In the last 20 or 30 years, we have erected a monument to feelings and made them the vantage point from which we make decisions. That's dangerous. That's not what the Jubilee trumpet announced, that you have feelings and that you could go forth and live by your feelings. That's not the Jubilee trump, but it's made to appear that it's a part of the Jubilee arrangement. It's to confuse the people." Then she says, and I quote again, she doesn't go in for the psychobabble, but she says, "I think," and I quote, "I don't think there is such a thing as self-esteem. People talk about it like it's their liver or their intestine. Don't worry so much about your self-esteem. Worry about your character. Character, character, character. That's what it's all about. But the present generation is what? What are they taught? Self-esteem, self-esteem, self-esteem. Don't worry about your self-esteem. We must train our children to worry about their character, their character, their character, in harmony with the Jubilee trumpet blowing." All right. Now, the same thing has happened even with regard to the restoration of Israel. You know what happened? In actually, the Balfour Declaration was signed by... in 1917, November 2nd. And you know how Chaim Weizmann secured it? It was because of the terrible conditions in Russia. He labored long and hard to finally make Great Britain realize that they had to have a homeland for the Jews. And finally, November 2nd, 1917, the Balfour Declaration was signed, guaranteeing the Jews a homeland in Israel. Well, what happened? You know, that was a part of the Jubilee trump, I believe. I hope you believe it too. But what happened 5 days later? November 7th, 1917, the Bolshevik Revolution broke out, and how many Jews got back to the Promised Land? They were sealed in there. No, the Lord opened the door and the devil closed it. And then, to make matters worse, the United States opened its doors to the few that could escape, and so did Germany, the Weimar Republic. Germany became a haven for all the persecuted Jewry of Europe. It was wonderful. They had liberty there. They could buy land. They could own businesses. They built factories, their children prospered, they could get educated in all the finest schools in Germany. It was like heaven for the Jew, and then what happened? It was a baited trap. Once they were there, the Weimar Republic collapsed, and Hitler came in, and the systematic destruction of the Jews began to take place. And so while the Jubilee trumpet had blown and recognized rights of the Jews to return, the forces of darkness were working to counter man. We got to realize that there's a struggle here. It's not just like the blowing of the trumpet and the world is going to collapse and roll over and say, "Oh, wonderful, Lord, take over." They are fighting this Jubilee trump in every possible way to prevent the establishment of God's kingdom and power and glory. Now, after the war, after 5 or 6 million Jews had been destroyed, the nations realized that what they had done to the Jews wasn't really quite right. So the UN gave them petitioned Palestine, and they gave the Jews a homeland. But they really weren't too worried about matters, because the Arabs were 100 to 1, and they figured You give them a homeland, the Arabs will drive them into the sea, and that'll end our problem completely. And we'll have all the largesse on top of it, having done the right thing for the Jews. We gave them what they wanted. But did it work that way? No. This one man took on 100, and they beat the Arabs back, and they kept the land, and finally, under the 67 war, they got Jerusalem, and that's still a burning issue. We see that under the blowing of the Jubilee, things are happening on the positive side, and the devil is working on the negative side to prevent the full establishment of the kingdom. I don't think the Bible students realize how strongly entrenched the devil was and is, and that his kingdom is being undermined on a slow and steady basis. And I know most of us thought, Bible students in the days of Brother Russell, that when 1914 came, in a few years, the kingdom would be set up, and it would just fall, the kingdoms of this world would fall in a heap. And then the kingdom of the Lord would be set up, and the Jubilee would have accomplished everything in a very short while. But it hasn't happened that way. We find that I think it's a little different. Actually, it's like one of these. Have you ever seen the demolition of one of these great big buildings in our time? Well, before they demolish it, there are people that are living there, and they have their offices there, and it becomes a seat of power, and a lot of things are functioning out of that building. And I think that's the way the world was before 1914. You had this structured world, but the kings and the old pre-1914 kings were all evicted from this building. So what happened? The financial kings and the religious rulers come back in, and there's a new set of kings in Revelation 18, you know, the kings of the earth, who live deliciously with her. Brother Russell says they're the financial kings. So you get a new set of kings come in. You got rid of one group, and you got another group in there. And the day will come when they will be swept out of office. And finally the day will come, you know, and I think this is one of the things the church is doing. They're putting the dynamite in this old building, and and when it goes down, it's going to go down all at once. Brother Russell said in 1 year, the whole thing is going to collapse. And I believe that that's true. It's like these big buildings. You look at it, it's standing and it's standing. You think, well, it's never going to go down. And it's being... The dynamite's being planted, and suddenly a moment comes in which it falls. I think that's a little bit about how the way the kingdoms of this world are going to end. Got to hurry on here. Well, we know that World War I ended the rulership of the ruling houses of Europe, the church-state arrangement. World War II brought an end to colonialism. And, you know, the nations thought, well, this is great. Colonialism has ended. But, and we saw, I lived to see all these nations when colonialism ended. They had their own rebirth of nations, over 70 nations or more. I think it's over 100 nations have been reborn. And especially in Africa, everyone thought it was going to be great. Got rid of these old colonialists. But it's just like the people living in Egypt. They didn't know that there were real storm clouds ahead. So they got rid of the industrial rulers, and who else took over? Well, you had men like Idi Amin, who took over Nigeria and slaughtered people by the hundreds. He stole billions of dollars, put it in the banks of Switzerland, and then he left the country. And to this day, it's bordering on, revolution. Same thing, the Hutus in Rwanda, the Tutus and Hutus. Sounds kind of funny, doesn't it? But Somalia, Cambodia, that was a peaceful nation. And suddenly forces of darkness took over. It was a prosperous, beautiful nation, peaceful people. And if you'd have told somebody in Cambodia that you're going to have such a terrible destruction, a wasting at noonday, they would have laughed at you. But, you know, we know what happened there. Russia's another victim. Nation. First, they suffered under totalitarian dictatorship called communism. after 70 years, you know, with millions killed under Stalin, some 30 million people died under his rule. And then we see when it collapses, they have more trouble. The nations cannot find the system of government that can bring about the real legitimate desires of the nations. And I think that the French Revolution was a miniature, as Brother Russell suggests, of what's going to happen at the very end. That was only a tenth part of the city that fell. But you know, in France, when the masses, when they formed the Third Estate and they took over that country, one of the first things they did was to storm the Bastille, and the Bastille was the prison. There were many Bastilles, but the one that was especially bad was the one that was near the royal houses there. And when the people went in and saw what the kings and the priestcrafts had been doing to them, they saw the torture chambers and how men were dealt with and tortured and thrown in barrels, as it were, stone barrels where they lived until they died. And when they died, they threw another man in there alive and threw food down in there until he died. That's how terrible things. When they saw that, then you realize the outrage. Well, they went after these priests and the leaders of that country with a vengeance, almost excessive. But we believe that these are the forces that are moving the world gradually toward Armageddon. The Jubilee trumpet is guaranteeing to everyone his legitimate human rights. But that doesn't mean that you have a right to everything you feel you have a right to. There are God-given inalienable rights which they have a right to. And this is what the Jubilee trumpet is going to give them. The devil has confused this. This is all subterfuge to stop the flow of human rights and human dignity. But our message, of course, in this time to the world should be seek meekness and seek righteousness. It may be that he will be hid in the time of the Lord's wrath. May the Lord add his blessing.
Well, that was a fascinating overview of the last century, wasn't it? Thank you, Brother Gene, for those evidences for us to consider. Let's close this service now with verses 3 and 4 of hymn 318. If you're able to, physically, to rise on the last verse, let's do that, and then we'll have Brother Gene close with prayer. 318. Mm-hmm.